Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Well, day three of the World Cup and Australia had us for a few moments daring to dream, but a 4-1 defeat to France leaves our panel of Mark Schwarzer from Qatar, Tommy Orr and Thomas Sorensen with some burning questions to answer. There was also a massive upset for Saudi Arabia against Argentina and a couple of 0-0 draws, but plenty of entertainment on a busy day of action. I'm your host, Amy Duggan, and this is the Optus Sport Football Podcast. Let's get into it. The Gegenpod. Well, what a massive morning it's been, and great to have Tommy and Thomas with us. Notice I'm still wearing my colours, boys. Still a proud Aussie, even though we went down in the end. Let's talk about the game, though, because it's wonderful to have you both here, but you must be feeling a little disappointed.
Absolutely. I think, obviously it's a bittersweet. You know, we started the first 20 minutes of the game so well. And then, you know, once they got their first goal back, I think we kind of capitulated. And the things that we did so well in the first 20 minutes, we sort of stopped doing them. So I think that was a little bit of the disappointing part of that game. But, I mean, yeah, hats off to France. We know they're an amazing team and they showed it today.
Yeah, and I think, you know, just looking at it, I think just the way the goals went in, I think some of the things I would have banked on was, you know, Suter and Raul's defending that 6-yard box. And that's where three of the goals went, more or less all of them went in from crosses. You know, so I think just the basic defending, I think it sort of bore the picture of just players that hasn't played together and hasn't played in a little while. I think it's, yeah, overall just disappointing. And the quality was there, you know, the quality difference was definitely there to see.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think, you know, if you look at the first goal from France as well, to concede off a set piece, albeit second phase, you know, that's not something that happens too often with a national team. So I'm sure Arnie will be quite disappointed with that one. And that really set the tone, as you mentioned, to the goals that came after.
Well, let's go over to Qatar and hear from Socceroos icon Mark Schwarzer, who was in the stadium watching all the action live. Mark, give us your thoughts on the game.
Well, watching Australia play today, obviously there was a slight surprise that Craig Goodwin started the match. I thought probably Abo Mbil would start, but obviously he didn't. And it turned out to be the right decision. Craig Goodwin, I thought, was probably one of our better players on the night. Got on the end of a wonderful cross from Matthew Leckie and rifled the ball on the roof of the net. And I have to say, I jumped out of my seat and shouted and screamed and celebrated. And there were pockets of fans near me that also joined in, which was quite interesting. But there was also a sense of eerie silence and almost like gasp of shock that the world champions were behind against lowly ranked and unfancied Australia. But overall, I think the tactics and the way that Graham Arnott spoke in the lead up to this game was all about being on the front foot and wanting to take the game to France and not sit back all the time and not just try and hold out for something. And I think for the first 20, 25 minutes, possibly even longer, 27 minutes, I think they did that. I think they were very positive. They were on the front foot. Maybe 20 minutes, and I think they dropped off a little bit then, and there were periods of time, probably up until, you know, shortly before they scored, that you kind of felt something was coming because they kept dropping and inviting the pressure of France onto them. And of course, when you're playing against players like Mbappe, Griezmann and Giroud and the form that he's in, it's very difficult to defend against when you drop deep and you need an out. We didn't have an out a lot of the times, and it was tough for Mitchell Duke, but we really needed him to be up front and really try and get hold of the ball, but it just wasn't to be. And it was a very positive opening 25 minutes from the Socceroos, I thought. I think there was a natural tendency when you go 1-0 up so early in a game against such a classy, top-class opposition, there is a sense of dropping off, dropping deep. And I just felt that we had too many players back. We dropped too deep. And we gave them too much respect. And it was too early in the game to do that. We needed to still be positive on the front foot. Look, at the end of the day as well, you're playing against an unbelievable opposition who also dictate the game. They have a lot of ball and they've got the quality to turn teams around, to find ways through them. And Mbappe's got unbelievable pace, as we all see and all know, and he's going to cause always a threat. So it's a tough one. And I just feel that, I know I've been there before, it is a natural tendency to drop. And we probably did that a little bit too early. I was really surprised we conceded so many goals in terms of headed goals. I thought with Suter roles in midfield, in the centre-half pairings, I thought we would be a lot more solid. We were for that first 15, 20 minutes, definitely. But then after that, the quality of the crosses is also very difficult to defend against. And sometimes it doesn't matter how good a header you got, how big a defender you got. If the quality of the ball, as well as the timing of the runs, is so good, it's difficult. But saying that, I didn't think the goals themselves were wonderful runs, timing runs. I just thought that we weren't tight enough, we didn't get close enough, and we didn't. That was the one element I was disappointed with. I thought Matty Ryan did what he had to do. He made a good save as well in the second half. Look, of course, I'm sure he'll look back at, and as I would always do, and you watch things over again, you go, if I did this, I did that, maybe I could have saved it. Maybe on another day, he would have saved one or two of them. Who knows? But look, there's no finger-pointing blame at whatsoever. I don't think, you know, I think the finishes themselves in the end were pretty good. And it was tough for Matty on a night when, you know, we were always going to be exposed at times. You know, unfortunately, we just got exposed too often. And look, the scoreline could have been far worse. I thought for Atkinson and Baige, it was always going to be a real tough night. They were always going to be under constant pressure. They were always going to have to deal with the pace of Mbappe, for example, most of the time. Griezmann's movement, Giroud as well. It's so difficult. And they've got players all over the pitch that can hurt you in any position. Their fullbacks getting forward as well. It's just so difficult to defend against. And, you know, I feel for the guys because they're up against the world champions, some unbelievable players. Sure, I think there's always something Australia could have done differently. I mean, you know, I personally would have been really disappointed. I was disappointed on the night of the goals we conceded. I thought, like I said, headed goals in the areas where I believe that we could have defended better against. And I don't think we defended that well. Firstly, the pressure on the ball, the cross to try and prevent, you know, put more pressure on that. It doesn't always work. Sometimes you have to just deal. You have to deal with the cross coming in. And I just don't think we dealt well enough with it today. That was a disappointing thing. And of course, we concede the second one by playing out, and it's a simple, basic mistake. But they're the risks that you have when you are a team that wants to play more frequently out of the back. Sometimes, and certainly against top opposition, the slightest mistake, they can punish you. And that's what happened tonight. I think it leaves us with really only one option, and that's to win the next two games. You know, when you've got a negative of three goals, you know, similar to what we were in South Africa against Germany, losing 4-0, we were obviously four goals behind, and we were always playing catch up. We ended up on 4 points, and it wasn't enough. And I fear that 4 points with our negative goal difference won't be enough, or at least our goal difference. And I think we have to really win our next two games to get through to the next round.
Well, thanks to Mark Schwarzer for your thoughts there too. So, Tommy and Tommy, let's get into the big talking points from this match, because as we go through it, Australia did get off to the perfect start, Tommy.
We did, and I think, well, France, the first 1 or 2 minutes were on fire, and I thought, oh, we could be up against it here, but, you know, after those 1 or 2 minutes, we really settled into the game well, and I thought we were really aggressive. We had, you know, really positive intent with the ball, and we caused them problems, and I think that we deserved our goal, to be honest. And I think, you know, after that, that's when things started to head south.
It was a beautiful piece of play though, Thomas, wasn't it? That long ball from Harry Suter out wide. We probably just didn't see enough of those sorts of moments in the game.
Yeah, and I think it exposed one of the weaknesses of the French team. I think that the fullbacks are really, really good going forward. I think Hernandez obviously sets up Rabiot's goal, but they were both exposed, really. You know, Hernandez not dealing with the initial ball, and then Pavard, I don't know what he's doing at the back post, but he's sort of drifting inside and doesn't go with, you know, with the guy at the back stick. So, you know, but again, fantastic goal. And it was the perfect start. It was the start that, you know, Australia wanted. You know, you want a bit of momentum. You know, sadly, they just couldn't keep it up.
Tommy, when Craig Goodwin scores, being the first active A-League player to score for Australia at a World Cup, and goals in open play have been something we've been talking about leading into this game, were we daring to dream here that we could stay in front?
Definitely. And I think, like Thomas just touched on as well, it wasn't only that we scored a goal against the run of play. I thought that we were good value for the goal. And, you know, we were really aggressive and we didn't give them any time on the ball. But with the ball as well, we were, you know, doing good diagonals and getting in behind the defence. And yeah, I thought at the start, I was very excited for, you know, could we maintain that? And obviously we couldn't. And I think that's obviously why it's so disappointing as well, because we proved that with the right intent that we were capable.
The defending was questionable a couple of times. A few of the goals, we saw Mbappe drop the shoulder and get in behind plenty, especially in the second half. There was a bit static in the middle. Obviously, Suter and Rolls in the centre there, but Suter coming back from injury. Was the selection the right one for the central pairing?
Yeah, no, again, you know, in hindsight, everything is easy. You know, I thought, you know, Suter, you know, if he felt, you know, he had played, you know, a couple of games for Stoke. But it's always a different thing when you're going up against the world champions. You got Giroud in there, you got Mbappe, you got plenty of players around. I think it was just in the manner that disappoints me, that the positioning, I think, was poor at times. You know, just losing players, too transfixed on the ball, not really being aware of, you know, the players around, where Mbappe, you know, was in the box, you know, for one of the goals. So, you know, that comes as well with match fitness, sharpness. And I think that was probably, you know, but what was the alternatives? I think in the squad, I don't think there was a lot of other options there really to deploy.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that, you know, our fullbacks obviously had a really difficult day as well. And, you know, it's an envious role playing against the likes of Mbappe and Dembele. And it's almost impossible to stop them getting crosses into the box. But I think that, you know, that they were cutting the ball back to the edge of the 18-yard box on, you know, many occasions. And we just didn't have the numbers around the ball to, you know, get the block in or whatever it was. And I think that was a disappointing thing. And, you know, if you look at how Saudi Arabia defended yesterday against Argentina, they had that desperation. I think that's what we were lacking today.
Well, as you mentioned, Atkinson and Bache both had torrid times against the wingers. But do you think we could have done anything different to stop that, Thomas?
You know, again, sometimes it also comes down to individual quality. And obviously the disappointing thing is that, you know, Atkinson losing that ball at the second goal, you know, it came at a crucial time. You're trying to hang on, you know, you've just conceded, and then straight after you concede again. And, you know, I think, you know, it's just a whammy. And Atkinson, again, obviously, for, you know, you mentioned Mbappe going past him. You know, it's like Tommy said, it is, you know, it's easy for us to sit here, but they're up against probably the two of the best wingers in the world. You know, the pace, and you're always on the back foot. And I think they just, you know, you could just see that the quality difference was just there. And you know, sadly, the guys in the middle just couldn't deal with those crosses because they were always going to come in.
Yeah, I think if as well, like you touched on that second goal and the mistake of Atkinson. And I think if you see how that goal kind of came about, I think we played a short goal kick from Matt Ryan. And I think in the context of, you know, the time of the game, we just conceded. You know, it's not too long till half time. I thought that was a poor decision. We kind of invited the pressure on ourselves unnecessarily. And, you know, I think we had half the team kind of preparing for the long goal kick. Atkinson coughs up the ball, but then you don't have the defenders around him to give him the support to, you know, make amends for his error. So I think that was maybe a naive decision as well. And it was, it just kept compounding that error by individual mistakes after that. So I think, as Thomas touched on, it wasn't only the general play, but the goals that we did concede were quite preventable.
Well, three of them were headers, of course, which, you know, set pieces are always very important at World Cups. But to concede three headers the way we did, I think there's some work to be done there, isn't there? Let's talk about the halftime break. We went in 2-1, as you said, Tommy, off the back of that second goal. I think Australia was still in the game, or a chance to be in the game there. SBS in their commentary with former Socceroo Harry Kewell, has pointed out that Australia had a lack of initiative when the score was 1-0 and 1-1, and that we stopped doing the things that we had done that had put us in front in the first place. Do you agree with him?
Yeah, to be honest, I think that, yeah, the first 20 minutes we were aggressive, you know, the pressing, all that kind of stuff. We had a real positive intent, and as soon as they got their first goal, that's exactly what we stopped doing. You know, we kind of sat off and we allowed the likes of, you know, Griezmann to play all these passes in behind. In the first 20 minutes, you know, we were right up against him, forcing him to pass the ball backwards. And if you give players like that time on the ball, you're going to get punished. And that's essentially what happened.
Maybe some of the substitutions came a little bit too late as well. I think, I think it was only Mitch Duke that went off just sort of shortly into the second half, but everyone else came on with about 15 minutes to go. We've seen, you know, around other games, just that injection, you know, with the heat as well, just that injection of energy can sometimes just change the dynamics a little bit. It was a strange way of sort of just allowing the initiative, solely in France's hands. I think, you know, they started well, but like Tommy said, it just, you know, just let it slip away.
The possession stats were clearly always going to sit in France's favour, and they did end up 62 to France, 38 to Australia. I think the interesting stat that came out of this was that Australia had no attempts on goal at all in the second half, and that's pretty damning. Did the substitutions of Cummings and Quoll come too late, Tommy?
Yeah, potentially. I think that there's two ways to look at this. I mean, you can also argue they didn't get any service at all. You know, there was no midfield playing the balls in behind for Quoll to run onto and to get into behind their defence. And I thought Aaron Moy, you know, towards the end of the first half was potentially, you know, forcing the issue maybe a little bit more than he usually would. But I think, you know, Ajdin Hrustić as well, who was obviously out injured, he adds a bit of more composure in the midfield. And I think if we can get him back for the next two games, that'll, you know, increase the service that we can get to those attacking players, because I thought that there was too much on Moy's shoulders this morning.
Tommy Sorensen, was it about service to the front players that they just didn't get it, that when Australia did win the ball from France, that we didn't protect it well enough and we didn't keep hold of it well enough as the game went on? We just gave it away too cheaply?
Yeah, initially, I think it you know, that was a part of it. But you also got to have the courage to get people forward. You got to have the legs to get people forward. There's a lot of things, because you know, obviously you're up against some of the quickest players as well in transition. So if you commit too many forward, it opens you up. But like we've seen, you know, courage gets rewarded. Like, you know, obviously Saudi Arabia was the great example. I thought Tunisia as well played with great energy up and down the pitch. And yeah, and you know, I think it was just lacking a bit. And it is tough when the service doesn't come in. You can put all these forward players on, but the ball has to transition through the pitch. And I think that engine room with McGree and Irvine and Moy, I think they were just overmatched, really.
It would be interesting to see their stats out of this game, especially how many Ks they run after Kylian Mbappe and obviously Giroud's second put the game well out of Australia's reach. But if we go post-match and we look ahead, Arnie says, we ran out of legs a bit. Are we ready to play games at this level, Tommy?
Yeah, well, obviously, I think the intensity of this game, you know, there's not many players in the Socceroo squad playing against opponents like these week in, week out. So this is another level than most of the boys are accustomed to. But, you know, not only that, you look at some of the injuries that we've had and the lead-in that a lot of our players have had, that they are underdone. So, I mean, I think there is a strong case to be made to say that they are our best players. So I can understand why Arnie puts them in, but it's always the risk that they're going to be undercooked. And if you're playing against players that have such athletic ability, like France obviously does, we did run out of legs. So, but I don't think it's a complete surprise, to be honest.
Yeah, but let's not like be too disappointed. I think, you know, on a positive note, I think, you know, it's the next two games for the Socceroos. And I think it always was, you know, the Tunisia game now is a must win. And, you know, it'll be a different proposition than France. You know, they'll cause different problems. But it's definitely a winnable game. So I think going forward, yes, they ran out of legs. It's a disappointing performance, and you know, a lot of things could have been done better. But you know, they're still not out of it. Like, they've got on paper the two sort of lesser teams to go, and you know, a win in the second game, and you know, you're off and running.
Let's move on to Tunisia then, because Rustic wasn't used as a substitute in this game, Tommy. We had heard before this game he was fit. Are we keeping him in reserve for the Tunisia game?
Yeah, well, I guess you don't know how many minutes he was available to play in this game. So, you know, given the context of the game, if you're 4-1 down and he's a bit of a risk, it probably was unnecessary to put him on and, you know, jeopardise the rest of his tournament. So I'm sure that the way that the game panned out played a role in that. But, I mean, like I touched on earlier, I think that we definitely missed him in the midfield today. So if we can get him back for that second game, I think he can have a really strong influence on the team. And like Thomas just said, I think that, yeah, in the Tunisia game, we'll have a lot more opportunity with the ball, hopefully, than we did today.
You got to look to attack the Tunisia game. You know, I think that's the bottom line. You got to go out there to win it and try to be in the ascendancy. Tunisia, you know, if you saw the Denmark game, I think they're going to play with a lot of energy. It's going to be like an away game, like the Danish team felt with you know, 80% of Tunisian fans in the stadium, creating a great atmosphere. But you know, if the Socceroos just keep their cool head, I think individual brilliance like a Kwol, or you know, they can make a difference. I hope we'll see some of those players.
I think what we need to take from this game is the fact that we scored a goal against one of the best nations in the world, and we scored first, and it was a beautiful goal. And then just screw that result up, throw it over our shoulder, pick ourselves back up, and focus on Tunisia. We play them on Saturday night at 9 p.m. and we'll all be tuned in to watch that one.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So let's talk about Tunisia's game against Denmark today, Thomas, because you've got a little bit of a vested interest here, of course.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, the scoreline 0-0, but Tunisia created all the best chances in the first half. In fact, also had a disallowed goal. It was a great save by Kasper Schmeichel, which no doubt you'll want to talk about, and some near misses as well.
I always thought it was going to be a difficult game, you know, a little bit of a banana skin. Everyone, at least on the Danish side back home, expected a win in this one, and you know, there was a couple of players with invested interest from the Tunisian side that play in Denmark. One of them was actually born in Denmark, and I thought the support they had in the stadium was tremendous, a little bit like Saudi Arabia. It was like playing at home for them, and you could see that sort of that energy from the stands went to the players on the pitch and gave them that second 12 man sort of. And yeah, as you said, they had the chances. I thought they were brilliant on the break. Djibali was all over the place, their striker. And you know, to be fair, I'm sitting here now, and I'm quite pleased with the draw. We came into the game. I thought we started wrong. You know, we started with the back five. You know, with the two wing backs. And I think it just took Eriksen out of the game. I think he was not really on the ball in the first half. He was too far forward. Dolberg didn't have the physicality to compete with the centre halves, the back three of Tunisia. And the change in the second half to a back four, I think, just got Eriksen more on the ball. And it sort of kept the ball in our ranks a little bit more, and we were more in control. Had a couple of chances, obviously. Cornelius, I don't know how he missed that chance. couldn't decide if he was going to poke it in or head it. So that was a disappointment. But as you said, Kasper Schmeichel made that fantastic save. I think initially it probably would have been ruled as an offside, but take nothing away from that save. And that's what he does so well, you know, spreading himself. And actually that swipe with his top hand was quite sublime. You know, normally you'll just spread yourself. But the way he sort of, you know, really like just swung his arm across and got it around the post was amazing. So, you know, we rode our luck and it could have been different. So I'm quite pleased with the draw.
You say you're pleased with the draw. It sounds like you you think Denmark should have won. Tommy Orr.
No, I don't. I think it was a tight game. And as I said, I'm pleased. As you said, it could have gone differently.
Oh, forever the diplomat. Look, Denmark did score a goal, but Tommy Orr, it was disallowed for offside in the second half. Who did you think had the better game, or did you think a draw was a fair result?
Yeah, I think overall a draw was probably a fair result, but it was probably one of the most exciting nil-all draws I've seen in a long time, to be honest. It was, it was action-packed and you couldn't take your eyes off the screen. But I think that, like you touched on, I think Tunisia in the first half kind of, you know, dictated the play and they put Denmark under immense pressure, but as the game kind of went on, I think in the last 10-15 minutes, Denmark had, you know, all the play and all the chances. And in the end, I think it was probably a fair result. But I thought, to be honest, in the last 10-15 minutes, Denmark was just going to nip in and get the win. But I think the pleasing thing from Denmark's perspective in that game as well was, you know, they did suffer a lot in the first half, but they found a way to keep it nil all. And I mean, the good teams can do that. And I think that would be a big thing for them going forward in the tournament.
Grind it out, and the Tunisians will certainly have some big crowd numbers behind them, whoever they face. And in Australia's case, that's us on Saturday night. It has had a bit of an impact. But where does this leave the group now? Obviously, France on top, and Denmark and Tunisia equal on points, and Australia yet to kick off our point scoring progress up the ladder, which is where we're going to end up. But how much pressure does this put on Denmark, Thomas, for the France game, especially after watching the performance this morning?
No, it puts a lot of pressure on now. You know, France can obviously seal the group more or less with a win, and you know, Denmark has to get something out of that game. You know, they have to get a draw at least to be in the ascendancy and have it in your own hands to some extent. So, you know, it's not the ideal situation, and you could see the disappointment and even in the comments from the Danish camp. You know, I think you know, they had banked on 3 points in this game, and as Tommy said, the way the game swung late on, they probably feel that they should have nicked it. But yeah, you know, you are where you are, and I think from Australia's point of view, it was a great result, because it sort of leaves them, you know, in that situation of beating Tunisia and then you know, and then hoping that France beats Denmark, and then you know you're in a great spot.
Yeah, I completely agree, and I think from an Australian perspective, like you mentioned, it's the ideal result. But if you dive a little bit deeper, I think there's a lot of worrying signs from the Denmark Tunisia game. I think that, you know, a lot of people were looking at that game thinking that Denmark was going to overrun Tunisia, and then that Tunisia game would be a really good chance for us to get 3 points, and we could go in for our third group game and, you know, throw caution to the wind and see what happens. But I think that game really highlighted to me how hard this second game against Tunisia is going to be, and I think we're going to have a special performance to get a good result there.
And how tight the fight for second spot in this group will be. Let's change tact a little bit now and go to one of the other really entertaining matches of the evening. Argentina faced off against Saudi Arabia. I don't think anyone saw this coming. It was an upset, absolutely. Argentina led, but then squandered their chances. They had a number of goals disallowed through offside calls and, of course, with the intervention of VAR, Tommy. But what were your overall thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I thought that obviously Saudi played with a great intensity even from the beginning, but they were playing such a high line defensively, and, you know, Argentina was getting in behind them, it must have been 7 or 8 times, obviously offside and having goals ruled out for offside. But I thought that, you know, it seemed like only a matter of time before Argentina would become, you know, 2 or 3 goals ahead, but they were wasteful. And I think that, you know, in the front third, they were uncharacteristically not learning the lesson in you know, arcing their runs more to be onside. And I think that, yeah, in the second half, obviously Saudi got that early goal and the whole momentum of the game completely shifted, and Argentina, you know, everything that they were doing well at the start to get in behind them, they were unable to produce those moments again. And I thought that the Saudi was great value for the win.
Thomas Sorensen, where does this rank alongside the biggest shocks in World Cup history?
I saw a stat this morning from Gracenote, which sort of uses all sorts of data to calculate these things. And this was this was up there as the biggest shock of all time. You know, ahead of the USA beating England in the 1950s World Cup. I think definitely, you know, it has to be one of the, you know, the biggest. But it, you know, normally shocks like these come around as a, you know, a fluke win, a smash and grab. But I thought, like Tommy said, the second half, Saudi Arabia totally dominated. You know, the energy, they really played well. They were, you know, you know, good value for their lead, I thought. You know, so you can't really say that as the game went on that it was a big surprise. So credit to Saudi Arabia and disappointment to Argentina. I think, you know, Messi, you know, didn't quite, he had that early chance, which he should have put away. And then, you know, just never really been the normal Messi sharp. You know, Di Maria got isolated, I think too far wide, only really came into the game the last sort of 10 minutes. Martinez, you know, again, then he's ruled out goals, his arc runs didn't quite, the timing wasn't quite there. So it was just, Argentina were just a bit off and looked like a team that was sort of just expecting to win this game. And at this level, you just can't.
It's always the first game that's the potential to cause an upset or a shock, isn't it? Which we were obviously hoping for against France. Didn't go our way, but certainly went Saudi Arabia's way. Let's quickly touch on the Mexico-Poland match. This one ended 0-0 as well. Memo Ochoa saving a penalty from Robert Lewandowski, Thomas.
Yeah, you wouldn't have thought that he was going to miss that one. You know, again, it was probably, again, a fair result, I think, overall. And the penalty as well. I thought Lewandowski did as much as the Mexican player. He pushed as well. He was obviously tugged. So it was probably fair that he ended up missing it. And I thought Mexico were brilliant. Should have won the game. I at least had the best chances. I think Irving Lozano on that right hand side was electric. You know, so they, you know, I can't wait for that Argentina-Mexico game. I think that's going to be an absolute blinder. And again, you know, I think still too much is on Lewandowski's shoulders in this Poland side. I think they, you know, they're just, yeah, a little bit too defensive for my liking. You know, not getting too many people forward. So, yeah. I sadly don't think they're going to get out of the group.
All right, let's move on to day four's preview because plenty more football coming our way, at least for the next few weeks anyway. First up tomorrow, Morocco and Croatia. It's Croatia's fifth World Cup appearance. I just want to throw this out to you. The three times they've lost their opening game, they've not made it out of the group, but the two times they have won the opening game, they've made it through to the semis, and that, of course, was in 2018, and then way back in 1998. Is this one a Croatian game, Tommy Orr?
I think this is an intriguing game. I think that Morocco's a really difficult and a sticky opponent. They've got a lot of technical players, and they've recently welcomed Hakim Ziyech back into the side, and we all know from, you know, his exploits, obviously, not too long ago at Chelsea, what he's capable of producing. So I think Croatia's definitely going to see this as a bit, little bit of a banana peel. Like Denmark's or the Tunisia game. So I don't think this is necessarily going to be a straightforward one. And I to be honest, I'm maybe predicting an upset.
All right, Thomas, let's move on to Germany taking on Japan because Japan were definitely potent in qualifying. They had almost 60 goals across their 18 games. They have shown they're good enough to keep up with European nations, as the Belgium game was an example of that. But the problem there was they had trouble holding the lead. How will this one turn out?
You know, this is another intriguing game. You would obviously on paper say that, you know, Germany is going to be the favourites. Missing Leroy Sané with a knee injury, I think, is a big blow for them. But hopefully we'll see, you know, one of my favourites, Musiala, in there in his place. You know, I think, you know... I think Germany will just have too much quality for Japan. They're going to try to hang in there and make it hard. But, you know, I see Germany running out as winners. I think, yeah, just too much quality overall.
Tommy, you mentioned Spain earlier and their win in 2010. They take on Costa Rica on match day 4. Can they re-find that form where they dominated on the world stage a decade ago?
Yeah, I think they're going into this tournament and, you know, they're flying under the radar a little bit. Nobody's talking or putting them in the conversation to be contenders to win it. But I think they're certainly capable, and I think they've got a fantastic manager in Luis Enrique as well. And he's obviously got, you know, proven credentials, but they also have a lot of really exciting, like, up and coming talent. And I think this could be a tournament where, you know, they emerge as the talent, not only the talent, but the present. And, you know, the likes of Pedri and these types of players, I mean, if they're on song, I think that they could, there's nothing stopping them going all the way. So, I mean, against Costa Rica, I can't see them not getting a good result, but I think if they put in a strong performance, they could really announce themselves at this tournament as well.
And just a reminder that Costa Rica was the last team to qualify for Qatar 2022. They'll certainly be up against it when they take on Spain. The other match will see Belgium and Canada face off. Now, Thomas, Belgium ranked second in the world, favourite for this clash, but I don't think Canada should be underestimated in their first World Cup fixture for 36 years.
No, for sure not. I think John Herdman has really done well with this Canadian team. There's some great talent in there. We obviously know Alphonse Davies. There's Jonathan David and Kyle Aaron as well, you know, so I think they've got pace and power that can, you know, that can cause some problems. You know, Belgium, you obviously, you know, with De Bruyne in there, you know, they've always they're always going to be a force. But is Hazard at his absolute best like he was, you know, 4 years ago? There's question marks of who starts up front. I think the back line is, you know, they're aging as well. So, you know, I've got my question marks. So I think there could be a potential upset in this game as well. I think Canada is going to surprise a few people. I think they've got more firepower than people think.
Big thanks to Tommy Orr and Thomas Sorensen. And a big thank you too to Mark Schwarzer coming to us from Qatar. Don't forget, the Gegenpod is daily during the World Cup, so make sure you hit subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, make sure you rate us 5 stars. And if the World Cup isn't enough of a football fix for you, you can also watch the WSL live and exclusive on Optus Sport. I've been your host, Amy Duggan. I will be back tomorrow to speak with you for more football on the Optus Sport Football Podcast. Thanks for listening. This is the Gegenpod.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.